With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy, well, I guess if you're listening to this, happy end of college basketball season, though I figure most people aren't super happy about it, but at least we got a memorable Final Four and hopefully a memorable national championship game last night, you tell us.
Congratulations to insert team here. Note, I hate both of these schools.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything against Gonzaga, so I'm going to be rooting for the Zags.
No, I am too, just because I don't want Baylor to have anything.
Yeah, I think it's different levels. And then happy baseball season. Now, I am currently watching the Mets in the second inning of their first game. Finally, we're finally allowed to play after the Nationals ducked us like cowards.
Now everyone gets Mets talk for the next 6 months.
have fun.
Because now we're going to be insufferable and maybe good instead of insufferable and usually bad.
Just wait till the Nets and Knicks are both in the playoffs. So the first time, I think, in the run of this podcast somehow. Maybe second time.
I feel like it happened.
Probably the very first year, maybe, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I'll fact check that for the notes portion of the write-up. But yeah, you might be right.
Because the Knicks both... Like, what was the Knicks' last playoff run?
13-14.
Okay, and that's, I feel like we're also into that year because that was like the Deron Williams just moved to Brooklyn teams. I think we played in the playoffs. No, we didn't. We played in like the Jason Kidd times in the playoffs once. But yeah, it's a rarity in any case, especially in this era of Knicks basketball. The Nets are you know, in and out. But yeah, so we're going to have some really just barely relevant non-Syracuse talk for a while now. So that's what you get in the summer.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, considering how much Syracuse talk, this podcast has gone from like mostly shenanigans, some Syracuse talk, and a lot of like random nonsense to, I'd say, like 98% Syracuse talk. And it's still going to be pretty high. But admittedly, in the offseason, like there's only so far we can dive into lacrosse teams every week. But we're going to figure things out. I was thinking up different guest ideas. So segment ideas, maybe like some, you know, random like realignment themed ideas, because that's always like a fun topic.
If the basketball team wants to spread out their transfers in and out over the next like couple months, that'd be good. Because like we're going to end up with like 11 or 12 different transfers in either direction. So if we can just get like one a week for a while, that'll carry us.
Yeah, that's a good news cycle. I've been and only getting kids from SB Nation blog, so that it's very easy for me to find someone to do a Q&A with. That would be ideal.
I thought both of those were really good. It's funny. I came away with the expectations for Swider a little bit not like doused. I kind of knew who he was, but like very much put in check. And then I came away from the Samir Torrance one being like, you know what? I think he could be more of a, like, probably not a huge impact player, but like a more of a contributor than I thought. So I thought both valuable insights from the Marquette and Villanova folks.
Yeah, we'll get into those a bit. I know that on the live cast, Steve, Christian, and Andy talked about this stuff a bit, but we'll get into that a little bit. The return to Barama Sidibe, and some other just like kind of what we're looking for in the transfer market and recruiting for the rest of the year of off season. Before we continue that, I did want to update on that playoff question. 2013 was the last time both teams participated in the NBA playoffs. The Nets lost to the Bulls in seven games in the first round.
Oh, that was a terrible series. I went to that series. I went to a blowout win in that series with a Bulls fan friend.
The Knicks, on the other hand, lost what I still to this day claim is a rigged conference semifinal series to the Pacers 4-2.
Roy Hibbert, dominant force.
just pure outrage. was not enjoyable, and that was the peak of the Stat Mellow years somehow.
So the question is, were we doing the podcast yet? It was either like right at the beginning or right
before. No, we definitely were.
I think that was the first year, basically.
Yeah, that was, well, yeah. I mean, 2013, we were either just starting it or, so it might not have, like, it might have started like around when like that play, those playoff runs were happening.
Yeah, that sounds about right. So I think we started it that summer.
Yeah, like right before we jumped in, actually started.
In pure nonsense time to really, we live as we were born.
Well, we just basically shit-talked every ACC team all summer and then joined the league to just set up, you know, what was to come, and every ACC fan base should have known.
Just a really, really great way to start. Although, I guess we were coming off a Final Four, so it was like prime time for it.
Well, Final Four, we were coming off
a Texas Bowl.
Texas Bowl win, and we just thought that the good times would just continue to roll because why wouldn't they?
Scott Schaefer has it all going.
Why, actually, no, that was not coming off Texas Bowl. That was coming off a Pinstripe Bowl when we actually did think the good time.
Even better. Well, Scott Schaefer still. We're, you know, don't, yeah. we he's going to keep it rolling. Who interim coaches always work out? There's no way to.
Future All-Star Drew Allen. There's
Drew Allen from Oklahoma. All the Sooners fans loved him because no one ever likes backup quarterbacks. So that was a good sign.
I kind of want to listen. I might do this at some point in the summers. Listen to the first episode and like under the new format with you and me, and like just pick apart each like point.
Oh God, I don't want to listen to myself from 7 years ago. That's
no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that to myself. I'm literally just going to grab the points from the podcast and then debate them here and now and show how wrong or right we might have been.
Oh God. I thought you meant you wanted to like Mystery Science Theater 3000, our old podcast.
Oh, hell no. I know. I never, full disclosure, I never listen to this podcast other than like when I'm editing.
I will listen the few times I'm not on, I'll go and listen after. Or there have been a few times where someone told me I said something that I don't remember saying, and I'll go back and try to figure out what they're talking about. But that's very few and far between.
So yeah, I did want to talk about the transfer stuff a little bit. Samir Torrance comes from Marquette. He didn't really put up an impressive stat line at all at Marquette, but did come in as a pretty highly rated recruit, four-star guy. And it just didn't work out for him as a shooter, but it did seem like based on what the Anonymous Eagle, the Marquette SB Nation blog said, has some pretty good court vision, like a pure point guard, and maybe someone who like, you know, not to like gas it up too much. I mean, the guy didn't play a ton at Marquette, so I'm not like anointing him a savior, but maybe someone who could, you know, split some minutes with Gerard, at least right now at the one, be a little more of a distributor, someone who can create opportunities for other players. Like, to me, that's something that we've definitely lacked of late. Like, Kadarius Richmond did that to some extent, but, and that's not to knock Kadarius Richmond, who I think was a great player. In the 1 year he got to play at SU, I think that at Torrance just might be like really like a pass first point guard who's able to, you know, create some opportunities, maybe plug in as a capable defender, and like that could be enough for us, provided we have enough playmakers. And obviously we don't know that yet because we don't know who else is transferring out of the program.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the lineups look like. We on paper, we should have enough shooting to surround. And we don't know if they won't be a great shooter. Like, he actually shot the ball really, like, quite well until this year, and he just could not hit a shot to save his life this year. Shot, like, 14% from three. But I think he was, like, 38% the year before, so it was, like, a really weird, precipitous drop. I'm willing to, like, take some time and hear, like, what he looks like after when he actually gets here. I know Anonymous Eagle hinted at it being like maybe a confidence issue in terms of the quick hook he had. It was kind of funny to read though, because it's not unlike what we get here a lot. You know, going to the veteran guards, playing them 35, 36 minutes. Those were like the dominant players for the team. And he just was kind of behind them and didn't get a chance to like really stretch himself out and get like acclimated to playing on the court. So I'm certainly willing to see what he can provide in the offensive end. But if the floor for him is just like, he's going to step in, he's going to be probably by default our best defensive guard, which is apparently like his real plus still. And then also just keeps the offense rolling, especially when we will have the ability to put three or four shooters around him at all times, especially with some of the additions we've made. Then I think it's, you know, a nice add to what we have. Obviously, if Kadarius says he wants to come back tomorrow, we're certainly taking him. He does not replace him. But even if Kadarius, like if Kadarius wasn't even in the transfer portal and it was just like, hey, this guy can give us some minutes on the defensive end and like be like a decent, won't stop the offense player at the point guard position, give us some minutes. Like, I don't think it would have been the worst thing to add him even in that situation. So,
I would have been more, excited to be honest. And that's,
yeah, because then it's building depth. So, yeah, I'm all for it. Obviously a local guy, which, you know, people are excited about. I think it's a nice, it's like a plus, but it's not like the reason you take him. But also like you can't overlook the fact that Boeheim's familiar with him because of that. He played in different levels with both Buddy and Joe. So there's going to be a lot of familiarity with guys already on the team. So I hope that he works out. At worst, I think he'll be a nice role player. And I think that's all we're going to ask him to be. So it's not going to be like he's coming in to be the local hero to save the day on top of the other local heroes we already have in the team.
Yeah, we definitely don't need any more of those based on our folk hero storytelling abilities as a fan base. I do think that, you know, Cole Swider is another one. And I think your take was pretty accurate. After hearing from VU Hoops, I think, you know, Chris Lane over there provided some great insights. I think a lot of people were projecting him as a Lydon type, and I think he can be, but I don't think he's going to be the same type of defender by any means. I don't think he's necessarily as athletic as Chris mentioned. I think where he could be really good, though, is as another guy who can shoot from outside. Maybe he's able to drive the lane a little bit more, become a bit more effective getting inside. Because ultimately, like, and I think, you know, Boeheim and the staff obviously see this, is like, you don't necessarily need another guy who's going to camp out on the wing, no matter who's back, because Buddy has progressed, but he's still largely going to be a guy who's going to be outside the arc. Gerard camps almost exclusively outside the arc. If Griffin comes back, he's another guy who spent a lot of time on the offensive end, at least, you know, kind of hanging out outside the three-point line. So I don't necessarily think we need somebody else who's only going to do that. But you look at the guy who's like 6'9", 215, you know, in Swider, and a guy who, you know, SU recruited pretty heavily the first time around. We were disappointed that we didn't get him a couple of years ago. Like, he seems like someone who, again, if we don't put the world on his shoulders and we only ask him to play, you know, maybe it's 20 to 25 minutes, maybe he's getting, you know, Braswell's minutes, basically. I don't think he's going to be the same defender as Braswell by any means, but if he gets like Braswell's minutes to some extent, like if we're only quote unquote asking him to do that, I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing at all.
It's going to be a lot to ask him to fill in the same way Braswell did on defense. I think by the end of the year, Braswell was like maybe our best wing defender.
Yeah.
And even if he was like a plus athlete, which it doesn't sound like he's a great athlete. Asking him to do that in the first year in the zone is going to be tough. Although he will hopefully have a full summer here. And he's a veteran player, so hopefully he'll pick it up quicker than most players. But yeah, I think the zone also, we've seen like some less great athletes, it not hide them, but like it mitigates some of the disadvantage they are versus Villanova, which plays that super fast switchy system, which sounds like it was a really bad system for him at the end of the day defensively. Where I think he could thrive is, I mean, his offensive rating and his offensive efficiency is like through the roof this year, or was through the roof this year. If he's, obviously we can't just have him camping out, as you said, we have a lot of those guys, but if he's a guy where like Buddy takes the ball off and is like driving to the wing and then starts kicking it out like he started too late in the year, like I think we're gonna have a lot of wide open Cole Swider corner threes where hopefully he just shoots like 45% and is lethal from there, spreads the offense. I think there's situations where either he, or assuming, and this is still an assumption because he is not committed at all, Jimmy Boeheim is here and playing forward slash like really small ball center, like we could see some really small five out like crazy shooter lineups. I don't know that we'll see a lot of them because Boeheim isn't that experimental when it comes to his lineups, but I bet we'll see it a little bit because he did get a little weird with it the end of this year. So
we'll see it against like Niagara or something, at least like at the beginning of the year. Yeah, I mean, like, we'll do it.
It would be really fun to see Gerard double Boeheim, Benny Williams, Swider lineup, where it's just like craziness. The problem is like we don't have, that would have been a lineup where Tadari Richmond thrived because it would be five out and he could just take the ball to the hoop at will. Right. But, you know, I don't want to harp on Tadari like the entire offseason. Like, it's still very disappointing. And obviously he hasn't gone anywhere yet, so there is still a glimmer of hope, even though it doesn't sound like it's super realistic.
Zero chance.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Boeheim's like, good luck to him. It's like, all right, well, I guess we know what's happening. But yeah, I mean, I don't want to like act like, you know, nothing positive can happen next year because he's leaving. But it is a little disappointing that, like, going four out with him would have been ideal. But we also don't know who else we get this offseason. I would still love us to get a point guard more of that ilk, like a can drive the ball, finish at the rim, kind of like Kadarius is, type point guard. Now, who knows who we get involved with, and who knows who even enters the transfer portal from here, since there's still, like, plenty of time, and it's been kind of a barrage already. So we shall see. We've also, like, we've been very quiet in terms of, like, the guys we've gotten involved with. Like, I think the only two we've reached out to are the two we got. So it sounds like Boeheim's really, like, targeted the guys he thinks he can get and who he wants. It hasn't been like we've been flooding the market with, like, we're hearing about Boeheim talking to, like, these nine guys. So,
oh, yeah, it's guys with pre-existing relationships, really.
Yes, which I get to a point. Like, you don't want to waste a lot of time. But I will be interested to see if we get a little more aggressive with some other guys, because I don't think there's a position where we couldn't take someone. Like, there's plenty of positive minutes to go around. It's not like anyone except for Buddy, really, and probably Benny, honestly, just through being a five-star, high-profile guy, should be, like, super locked into their spots at this point. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. And, like, right now, like, knowing what we do know, we mentioned Buddy, Joe, you know, we have the two transfers. Jesse Edwards is back. We probably have Jimmy in the door, if I had to guess. But then Barama Sidibe said he's coming back today, which is good if he can stay healthy. I think if he could stay healthy, then we actually have something pretty interesting next year in the kind of true center that we didn't necessarily have last year. I think some people believe that, you know, this kind of puts Frank Anselm's future in doubt, because if he decides he wants to go, honestly, like, I don't think it does that necessarily. If only because I do think that, like, I wish Frank had played more this past year, to be honest. And we still don't know about Woody Newton. I think he ends up transferring, but we don't know that yet. Frank could end up being more of a, like, four. And I think from all accounts, like, it seemed like he was somebody who had a little more offensive upside. Like, having him and Sidibe play at the same time, or Sidibe and Edwards play at the same time, like, could create some interesting lineup combinations. I don't necessarily think that Sidibe and Edwards coming back means that Anselm is automatically gone necessarily. So we'll see there. I think that it'd be great to have somebody else back. I mean, if Quincy comes back, then I think all bets are off and you see a much different lineup and actually a pretty good team with transfers. But I really do hope that with Sidibe coming back, we actually get to see him on the court, because it really, in the times that we have seen him play, like, consistent minutes, he's been good and, like, fairly effective.
Yeah, I was impressed with him the little we saw from him this year, and I also hope that this does not mean he's not coming back. Obviously, he sent the tweet that quickly deleted, and he claims it'd be weird to, like, send that tweet, delete it, claim it wasn't what everyone thought it meant, and then also still transfer. Like, at that point, just don't say anything. But like at first, I was like, I'm happy because Barama's coming back. I think Barama, when he's healthy, is an effective player. I think just knowing that we have two centers for the first time. I can't even remember the last time we had two really, like, you know, you don't have to worry about one of these guys being in centers who can play all 40 minutes total. It's just a really nice.
Ayo and Rick Jackson.
Honestly, it might be. Because, like, the last time I felt really great about our center position was probably the last routine year, but he was really the only guy. And he was playing, like, 30 to 32 minutes a game.
Well, he was the entire team, pretty much.
Right. So it wasn't like there was a great backup. Like, when he was out, we were just, like, kind of figuring it out. This would be like, you know, you play them 25-15, 20-20, I think. They're both different players, him and Jesse. Then, like, Frank, I think when we recruited him, there was, like, thought that he might be, like, a smaller five, but even, like, a bigger four. We've seen us play those two big man type lineups with AO and Rick before and be effective, even if Rick wasn't, like, the, like, exactly what you think of as, like, your typical four in the zone. I think Frank fits that more. He's super long and athletic. So yeah, I hope that Boeheim tells him, hey, obviously he was, you know, he had injury issues and health issues this year. So it wasn't like he was just getting held out because he couldn't play this year. But I hope that, like, we're saying we're going to try a bunch of different lineups, and you are much different than the other fours we have on the roster. So it's not like just because we have these two centers here means you'll never play, because hopefully there's some minutes at multiple positions. I think that would benefit everybody involved, because, you know, you want to, if you're a player, you want to be as diverse you want to have as diverse a skill set and ability to play as you can, just to give yourself more opportunities to get on the floor. So, and I'm just pro depth on this Syracuse team that always always shows so much of it throughout the year.
Of course. Yeah, I think for me, we can talk about this a little bit after halftime. For me, I think I want to see a point guard push Joe, but I want somebody who like pushes Joe into like a cool six man role that I think you and I have discussed before, like he would, could potentially thrive in as like an energy guy. And I'd rather someone who was like a legit, like, you know, P5 starting caliber point guard in there who played similar to Kadari in large part, because I think Joe could be more effective and really more dangerous as a six man. I think if Griffin's gone, I'd like someone to kind of fill in that spot, and maybe it's Swider, but ideally you're not putting all that on him. I think Benny Williams is going to kind of play somewhere in that three or four spot, which could be good. I think depending on who else leaves, it would be great to bring in, you know, a legit center. And I think, you know, to be honest, like a lethal, like kind of like shooting wing behind, you know, Buddy. I mean, that's really the one problem. And I think this is what SU's going to run into a bit this offseason is how many 2022 kids, like from a high school prospect standpoint, you're going to be able to bring in. You have room for several, but at the same time, like they know they're probably like at least a few of them are know they're going to be stuck behind, you know, existing players. And especially with the zone, like you're going to be stuck behind guys like Buddy, potentially Gerard, even if we have some reservations there, Sidibe, like there's definitely names in front of you. So if you are one of the top 2022 guys, and I feel like we faded on a lot of those guys at this point, unfortunately, like do you want to pick SU if you feel like you have some NBA talent and you feel like the depth chart's kind of already close to you?
Yeah, and this is what we said after the Tadari news. Like, with that release, which obviously Boeheim denied, which we all know he would, even if it's true, that Tadari was basically told there was no opportunity to be the starter next year. Like, that just makes it really hard to bring someone in who wants to start right away. And that's what a lot of these guys want. And, like, whether or not they're able to do it when they get there is one thing, but you want to at least, like, keep the doors open. And I also agree, obviously, on Gerard. Like, I think he would be much better suited as an energy guy off the bench. He's much better off the ball. He's much better when there are multiple ball handlers on the court and he doesn't have to take that all on himself. Whether he was playing with Kadari or you know, whomever, like mostly Kadari, cause that was like the main ball handler, but also when Marek was taking off more of the offensive playmaker role, like I thought he just played a lot better in that role. And it's not about us like not wanting Gerard to play. It's about us wanting Gerard to play in the positions in which he's most effective. So yeah, you don't want to close anything off. And that's, you know, a lingering concern with this whole situation, especially with so many moving parts.
100%. So, Dan, I figured you do a little halftime here. So what have you been drinking?
It was mostly Connecticut stuff because I was back home for a couple of days. Had a couple different things from Two Roads. Had their Two Juicy IPA, which is, as you expect, very, very, very juicy. Quite good. Had some of the Road to Ruin. Had some different stuff that is still over my parents from Half Full, their North Stamford Homestead series. Had a couple of other things that I have in the growlers from the last couple of weeks. So not a ton of like brand new stuff, but just getting through some of the stuff I have on hand here and back in Connecticut. But I will be, I should be upstate this weekend, New York, up in the capital region. So we'll have some stuff to report on from there.
Hopefully you get to get over to what's it called? Suarez.
Ooh, I didn't think about that. I should see if we can make a stop.
Suarez, of all, like, I went to a few when I was over there a couple summers ago, and Suarez, I mean, I already had some Suarez family before, but yeah, Suarez family would definitely be the top pick in my book. But
Suarez is always excellent.
Oh yeah. I mean, their Pilsner, I mean, like, I love Pilsners out here, but like Pilsners are very good. Their pale ales, IPAs are all like fantastic. They just do some great work. And it's a cool tap room. I don't know how like much seating they have, if any, right now, but I'm sure you can at least swing in for some beer.
Yes, I will see if we can get over there.
Indeed. On my end, had a few different things. I had a Nico Kingdom. It's a pineapple goza from Modern Times. It was very good. I had Dinosaur World from Modern Times, hazy double IPA. Extremely good from them. I've had it before. They brew it every year. I'd argue it's one of their best beers, and they have like so many good ones, but Citra, Amarillo, and Mosaic beer. So just, again, extremely good hazy. Actually, like, doesn't have any of that like bitterness and like heartburn inducing stuff that that usually draws me away from them. Had from Modern Times also the Demon Hand. It's a dark lager. So a dark lager that they they put for 3 months in one of their oak fetters, and so they end up like with a barrel aged stout like kind of flavor profile, but without the alcohol content that goes with that. So really, really excellent beer there. Actually got to go out to dinner for the first time in over a year. Had some dinner outside, had Chief Peak IPA from Topa Topa Brewing out here, and then Hazy Dreams from Abnormal Beer Company down in San Diego. For Modern Times, I had So Good, just a standard American lager that they had brewed up recently, and that was it. A decent list.
Good work.
Yeah, now I basically have the second half of all of those four packs in the fridge, so next week's not going to be the same variety necessarily. But some other things, Dan, I know obviously like there's plenty going on for Syracuse still. Before we do a little bit about the lacrosse team's recent struggles, it looks like Ed Hendricks is no longer a Syracuse student. There's no indication that he's no longer a Syracuse player just yet.
Those two things go hand in hand, though.
Typically, there is the like you could have maybe taken the semester off for COVID, but then you're coming back this summer, like way behind any like playbook installation, stuff like that. And obviously a guy like Hendricks, who, in several years has not really been on the field much at all, except to get into a collision with Andre Sisco. It doesn't necessarily help you become like a key target, and a guy that came as a four star, seemed like a guy who could really be a great outside receiving option. And now it seems like, at least according to like some of the early practice notes, that guys like Damian Alford and Javonte Williams have at least like sort of ascended into those roles along with Anthony Quealy and Taj Harris.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating because we were very excited about Hendricks coming in. He was a borderline four-star guy, and we've really struggled. We talked about it a couple months ago, I think, after the football season. Like, we've had our share of those type of players coming to the program, and our hit rate on them is just extremely low. And between like getting them on campus and also having them succeed once they're here, and it's one of those things where like you really wonder. And it's not just Babers; like it's been going on since Marone was here. Even
Robinson.
Goes without saying Robinson as well. But like, it's one of those things where you wonder just like what it is, if it's like something about those players not quite living up, because, and that's a part of the reason why we got them. But even so, even if they were like not quite a four star, but like maybe a high three star, like that's really still a really useful player for us. And like, I was going through them today, and it's like, and I know we had a list at some point a couple months ago that was like more substantial.
About this at some point.
But like, if the hit rate was even like a third, and by like hit, I don't mean like bona fide NFL player. I mean like player who was like a useful starter for at least a year or two. It's extremely low and disconcerting. And again, I don't want to pin this all on Babers because it goes way before him. So yeah, just very, very unfortunate. Like, Kadir White, again, another one in recent years, also didn't pan out at all. I don't even think he saw the field really for us.
Lee Pogba might end up on this list too.
He could. Mikael Jones has been good. And
Mikael Jones has been very good.
He looks like he's going to be a...
Because he's not with the team. He's suspended indefinitely at the moment.
Yes, that would also be bad. I still like hopefully have hope that he'll get it together because he's at least like... We haven't seen enough from him, or he hasn't been hurt. Like, it's kind of like an availability thing with him. So hopefully he can... rebounded himself back in good standing with the team and figure it out. But yeah, just another just really unfortunate, like, we just cannot seem to figure it out when we get these quote-unquote most talented players in our program on campus. It's just been disappointing. So not great when like you scratch and claw to get these kind of recruits and then just can't develop them up, whoever's fault it is. Like, I don't, it's obviously a case-by-case thing, so it's hard to just like slap a label on it when also like we bring in these two, we have plenty of kids who were nothing recruits and end up being really good. So it's not like we can't develop anybody. It's just I don't know. It obviously the evaluations in general are flawed, but I think they've just generally like on a macro level are pretty good. Like if you look at the NFL draft, everyone always talks about when someone was a two-star recruit who ends up at the MAC school, but the majority of the people who are going at the top of the draft, especially when you compare to, like, there's a lot more three stars and four stars, like the four and five stars end up being better per capita by a decent margin. So people obviously, like, it's a good story when an unrecruited guy turns into an NFL star. But if you just, like, do the percentages, a much higher percentage of the blue chip players become great. So it's disappointing when we just can't have any of that work out for us. So yeah, hopefully whatever needs to be solved there, hopefully it happens, because it's very frustrating. It's so like a case by case thing that it's hard to even ascribe, like, exactly what the blame is.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. I think, you know, there's nothing like nefarious at fault here. I just think it's weird that you look at the lack of success rate. And I mean, and even adding up, like, this isn't really even counting, like, all the, like, swings and misses on Schaefer's end, which, like, the only thing he really had going for him from a talent acquisition standpoint was that he was willing to kind of, you know, take big swings on guys who were qualification risks and guys that he felt were, like, you know, kind of either, like, passed up by the system or things like that. And, like, just guys who weren't going to be able to pull it off, but he wanted to see if they could, because you get an Ohio State caliber player basically on the cheap, because Ohio State wasn't going to take the risk on him because they knew they could get 17 other guys who were also a four-star safety. And I think, you know, this isn't even counting those situations that also didn't work out. So it's definitely been rough. And realistically, you know, like, this isn't an SU talent evaluation issue either. Like Schaefer did identify talent well, and his staff did identify talent pretty well early on. And a lot of their recruiting for years was used as, fodder for bigger programs to kind of copy. And SU was clearly doing something right when they hired Ryan Bartow a couple of years ago. And Bartow's now at Florida State because people identified once again that, like, Syracuse is pretty good at identifying this talent. And they're doing it again here, where you're seeing, like, I was doing some work on the 2022 like targets today, and you see these guys that, like, months ago had, like, it was like Syracuse, Yale, Air Force, and, like, Dartmouth were, like, the only places that it offered them. And now, like, they have an LSU offer, a Miami offer, and, like, a Bama offer. Like, Syracuse has been able to, for years, like, been able to evaluate talent well up front. It's frustrating that a lot of the top level talent that does make it to campus doesn't work out. But I do think some of that is turning around a little bit when you look at a guy like Trill. Cisco was a higher three-star guy who, like, those that saw him play knew that he was pretty talented. Melifonwu was a guy who, didn't necessarily get the high marks coming out of high school, but obviously turned into something else. And I think you're going to see some of that start to turn around here, but, at the same time, like, certain positions, offensive line and wide receiver in particular, that just, like, haven't worked out.
And that's where it's hurt, because, like, it's been positions where we've struggled. Like, when you get a guy like Kadir White, you hope that he's going to become, and we knew he was a developmental player and it wasn't going to happen overnight, but you hope that he's going to become, like, the anchor left tackle for at least two or three seasons, and to not have him be able to play at all, I think, is really disappointing. So, it's just hopefully we turn it around, but it's also, like, again, you can't always fault the staff. You can fault the staff for not developing those individual players, but they develop plenty of others. So obviously they're doing something right, at least in certain situations. You can't blame the services for overhyping these guys, because they nail, I'd say, most of the guys now, at least, like, a good portion of them. So it's just, you know, I don't know if it's bad luck or what it is, but it's certainly frustrating. And that's not to say we shouldn't ever recruit blue chip players anymore, because that's how you dig yourself farther into a talent hole. And then you get guys like Trill Williams, who were really good players for us for 3 years. I want more Trill Williamses, as many Trills as we can get.
Get more. Who knows? Now, if all three get picked in the top 100 coming up, and if Deuce Chestnut ends up turning into something really good in year one, and I think he might have the opportunity to do that. And you look at all the other guys still on campus.
Garrett Williams.
Garrett Williams in particular, who could be, like, all conference in preseason. Like, there's... It starts at one, and we talked about this a little bit before, like, it starts at one position group where if you establish notoriety for one position group, and in our case, this could be defensive backs. Like, this used to be Virginia Tech's thing, and, like, a few other schools' thing. Like, Miami has done this, Florida State's done this. Like, if you bank on defensive backs. And you're hearing it when you read the interviews with all the current targets. The same thing with the guys last year that were coming in, like the success and the ball hawking that this system and the previous system were preaching for guys like Cisco and Melifonwu and getting out Garrett Williams and Trill and even like Evan Foster, like who, you know, was getting opportunities with the NFL despite not even having like that great of a senior year. Like the system is working and it's putting guys on NFL radars. And that's resonating more and more. And you look at the caliber, like I was going through the 2022 targets today. Like you look at the caliber of player that we're offering, like we're going up against, but we haven't won them yet necessarily, but we're going up against the Alabamas and Clemsons and Ohio States and Oklahomas and other schools of the world for these guys. And we definitely, you see at that position group versus others where we definitely elevated the level of player that we're willing to kind of get into it with.
Yeah, and that's the position group to start, honestly. Quarterback's 1A, and like we're starting to see some movement there with bringing Garrett Schrader, hopefully an increased recruiting. And I think we've kind of turned that position room around in a hurry because it was a major concern that you don't have to go back that far to remember. Hopefully, obviously, Tommy turns around this year, another one of our former four-star recruits. But then cornerback, defensive back, I think maybe offensive line and that are like the second tier of importance. So maybe throwing defensive line just because of the scarcity. But like if you have a really defensive backfield, even that we had like this past season, most years you're going to be in pretty good shape. Obviously we went 1-10, which is kind of difficult to do when you have like two, obviously Sisto was hurt for a large percentage of the season. I don't know if we would have like won an extra game or two with him. Probably not, honestly, maybe one.
The only game we won was without him.
Yes. That was the game he got hurt, right? He got hurt before.
Yeah, he got hurt before Georgia Tech.
Yeah, so like maybe he picks up a pass in one of these games and turns it around, but it's hard to know like the impact of one guy. But in any case, like if you have that much talent in the defensive backfield in a passing oriented sport now, like you're in good shape. So I guess like you wanna trust the process over results there, but I do love what we're building in that position group because it's impressive and it's a tough place that it's tough to develop that much talent. Like that offensive line, I think there's a lot of guys. It's just you got to get the right ones. I think honestly, cornerback and defensive tackle are probably the hardest places to recruit besides quarterback, like really good players. Yeah. So to like lock up that position for a couple of years running now and develop meaningful depth, which we did last year, if nothing else, that's a good starting point.
Yeah, I completely agree. So I think that's it for football, at least this week. Dan, before we go, I did want to just talk quick about lacrosse. I know ending on a sour note, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Two rough games this weekend. Men's lacrosse team got off to a pretty nice start against Notre Dame. Ended up getting stomped into hell by an 18-11 score. That was not ideal. And then the women's lacrosse team stomped even further into hell, 17-6 after a hot start for them as well. This is rough. It was the first loss for the women's team, so I think that they're in a good spot to be able to bounce back. The men's team, they've lost games before. It is what it is. They've lost games this year before, obviously, but you are starting to see there's like a little bit of an issue. Faceoffs are not just a little issue, it's a large issue, and we've seen faceoff issues plague this program before, but it's faceoffs. And then for some reason, a team with a lot of offensive firepower just can't seem to just put the ball on net enough. And a lot of that comes back to faceoffs. I think defensively too, there's been a lot of breakdowns. That's incredibly disappointing. Like I kind of said it on Slack within the, noon's chat that we have, like I'm really bummed because I feel like last year was such a missed opportunity. And I think you're already seeing the opportunity to avenge that kind of slip away this year. We just end up with like a bit of a lost season. While the women's team, I think, still has a very, very real chance to compete for a national title, even if, if they face North Carolina, no, but anybody else, maybe.
Yeah, it's been tough because, like, there are some of these games where they looked so dominant, and then you had the Duke game, which, like, was an incredible game, but really disappointing with how it ended, and then this past week where it just seems like they get in these ruts mid-game where they fall behind by 4 or 5 goals, they can't win a face-off, they just kind of lose fundamentals on defense, can't get a ground ball, that are troubling. I don't know how you kind of break out of that thing where you're giving up 4 or 5 goals in quick succession and burying yourself into these big holes. Obviously against Duke, we got ourselves out of it and then lost at the end. Notre Dame and Army earlier in the year could not overcome it, but It does seem like we're not quite at that high level. I think we can beat those teams in a different game, but the consistency isn't there. So yeah, it's just tough because it felt like we were in those games for, you know, so long. Especially Notre Dame was obviously got out of hand a little sooner, but you also can't go giving out 5 or 6 goals in a row like they did in both of those games and expect to like just claw yourself out of it every time. Like, so yeah, just it's tough, but hopefully by end of the year we're kind of developing some answers to those things. But overall, like right now, it doesn't sound like we have quite recaptured the magic of the 2020 national championship run.
Yeah, of course, like it's always the tendency with SU lacrosse in particular to like extrapolate out a couple losses into like Desco doesn't have it anymore. This program's not where it was. Like a lot's changed about the sport. I'm not going to say that means SU can never compete for a national title again. I don't think that's the case. Like, you know, again, SU was probably one of the top 2 to 3 teams in the country last year. I think this year, I think they're maybe a rung below that. But the right matchups in the tournament, like it doesn't really take much to get yourself to the Final Four if you're capable. And I think this team is talented enough to go. I think that really the you can only go so far. I mean, it's a testament to like how good that team was in what was 14 when we lost to Duke. How good that team was talented wise, coaching wise, everything like execution wise. The fact that a team that could not do anything, at the dot was still able to. Almost win the national championship that year. And then you look at a team like this, obviously the sport's changed a bunch, even just since then. There may be like a step below that. But if they can, again, fix some of the issues with faceoffs, I think you see this team go right back to, you know, that short list of like 5 to 7 teams that can win a national title this season even.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's deading. I mean, we talk about this all the time. Like it's deading. More like basketball, where I think the most you can hope for is to like have yourself in position to be competitive every year, and hopefully it works out because it the tournament is even it's not quite basketball, but it is very matchup based and can be hard to just like guarantee yourself a run. So yeah, I'm not gonna get like too worried. I do think it's really tough that we didn't get to see last year's team make a true run at it, because I think they would have won it. I think they were the best team in the country.
Yeah.
But you know, it's still relatively early in the year. And we've seen lacrosse teams peak at the right time. Not again, unlike basketball. So not get too bummed. I still think this is like pretty solidly like a top 7 or 8 team. So hopefully Dester gets them going in the right direction here in a couple weeks. But having those two games like close to back to back is difficult.
Yeah, and like you think too, like this is obviously just a different type of schedule than SU would normally face in a lot of ways. You know, you get two games against Notre Dame. You get the one bad part, I think, really, is that we have so many home games. And if you have so many home games and yet can't really, like if you can't get it done with this many home games, it's a bad sign.
yes, that
Army just is, we're just like snake bitten against Army. We faced Virginia twice as well. This season, so like we have so many shots at these good teams, but like SU could lose 4 or 5 games this year and still be a top 5 to 7 team, and that just again because like the structure of the schedule this year, I think that you know I don't want to extrapolate out what happens this year for everything. I think you can where you can extrapolate out what's going on with Desco and what's going on with the program is just that like. There are certain things that have been consistent issues, faceoffs being one of them more often than not in recent years. And again, like last year being lost to us, like we'll never know what that, I mean, we can joke about what that was and national title that, you know, SU was probably going to win. But like without that now, Desco's kind of legacy and his legacy in the last, you know, decade has a real like hole in it that isn't even his fault. And I think, you know, everyone forgets about that if they win a championship this year or next year or the year after, at least get back to the Final Four. But the pressure is going to keep mounting here. And I don't think SU makes a move, but the pressure will keep mounting if you don't get yourself back into, you know, Memorial Day weekend shape.
Yeah, I think you just need to look like a team that contributes for a Final Four every year. And if you do that more often than not, like you're going to have things go the right way at some point. And obviously, like, you know, I'm only half joking. Like, I really think it would have been last year. I thought that team was locked in.
Same.
When things were canceled. And it's just a totally different conversation if he wins in 2020. And unfortunately, that didn't work out. I also don't think, like, there are people who complain about Destro. Obviously, like, it's an interesting comparison to make between the Destro situation and the Boeheim situation, which are similar and different in, like, so many ways. But I don't sense that, like, institutionally there's a lot of push for, like, Destro needs to radically change a bunch of stuff. I think he's probably pretty well locked in when it comes to, like, Wild Hack and everyone else making decisions. So I'm not super worried about him not getting his fair shake.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. Dan, anything else before we depart today?
The Mets have just taken, looks like a 2-0 lead with bases loaded in the top of the fourth, and the Phillies making a pitching change. So things are off to a very Mets opening day start.
Undefeated Phillies.
I didn't see 3-0 undefeated first place Phillies, yes.
Hopefully not for long.
Yes, I will love to be 1-0 over the 3-1 Phillies in this in this very dumb looking first week of the season. Thank you, Nationals, again. The Nationals just shouldn't play this year, I think.
I mean, I think the Nationals should give back the championship.
And move back to Montreal.
Move back to Montreal. Give that to the people of Montreal. It's only fair. Because honestly, I'd be fine with losing to the Expos. Like, that's better. I just don't want to lose to the Nats.
The trophy should live in Yuppie's home. And I don't know where Yuppie lives. I assume he lives in a Hobbit-esque side of a hill somewhere in rural Quebec. But that's where the championship should be.
I do feel like the Nats should be forced to play like 10 straight games in Quebec, but like only in, but the only way you're allowed in is if you're an Expos, former Expos season ticket holder, so that you can heckle the team the entire time.
In just like really horrible and French insults.
Yeah, only French insults. It'll be pretty great.
Hey, we fit the Nationals. Yay for us.
Yeah, finally, they're watchable.
Sorry, Brett Kavanaugh.
All right. On that note, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Train Hands and Absolute Podcast. If you rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Megaphone, on TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. And
go Orange.